Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch a cat. Fish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around.
this land.
We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Yeah.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com, and Thomas is getting impatient. All right, so basically, if you go over there to www.shazizradio.com, if you want to see some of the links that I'm going to talk about in there, the first one up at the top, let's see, there's a couple of them there by Lid Motor. I'd like to go over and take a look at these. Excuse me. That's really good for radio. So, I get to go over and take a look at these two videos that he's got going on there. One of them's an induction motor that he made out of a basically a metal lid and a circuit that he's using. Super inefficient, but has a deal that basically uses Lenz's law that we all use in a lot of our induction motors these days. And the next one in line is a video that he did where he took one of his old static motors and put a piece of aluminum foil inside the cylinder of that and was spinning a magnet and basically turning that deal. I'll get to why I'm pointing all these out here in a second, but the next one down there in the line, and while you're over there at Lid Motors YouTube channel, if you get an opportunity and you like what you see there, subscribe to his channel. Help support these guys because they do all kinds of research that points out a bunch of anomalies that we see all the time, but we don't really pay attention to in all of our electrical equipment out there. The next one down there in the line is one that was done by Ludic Science. There's a video that he posted where he made a solar power motor, and what I typed into the comment section on his video, I thumbed up the video because I liked the video, and what I typed in said, most people would see inefficiency with this design. I love it, and what I see with it, with this and many others is ideas. Put the pieces of the puzzle together, people, and get the big picture. And I almost pretty much give away what it is I'm trying to point out here, but moving right along, the next video down, I can't remember, I think it was Robert something down there. I'll have to check back later. Sorry, Robert, that's the one. Anyway, there's two videos underneath there. One where he made a solar-powered electric motor. No, that one wasn't Robert. I know that one now. Anyway, this guy on this next video down, this is a solar-powered motor. And, I missed one, didn't I? Doggone it. Yeah, I did. Sorry about that, folks. The one that, he takes a blender motor, stands it vertically outside of its shelf, and he's using a magnet to speed this thing up and slow it down. You gotta see the incredible speed that rotor's turning at. And I kept waiting for the doggone thing to fly off the handle and smash something in the room, but it didn't. It was pretty impressive what it was doing, spinning like a top. But you can hear the RPMs in that thing as that thing's screaming along. And he moved the magnet in and out away from it and was able to get this thing to run. You just say it's just something you'd have to watch to understand what it is that I'm talking about. The one down below that one is another one. I can't even remember. I think that one was Robert. I might get that mistake. Oh, I'm gonna have to make some better notes, Thomas. Anyway, this one here was a basic salt battery. He took essentially a copper pan and an aluminum pan and set them down inside each other and then poured salt water in between the two of them and hooked a little electric motor up to with a pinwheel on it, so you can see it's turning, hooked it up to the two pans and got the electric motor spinning. So, you know, most people, when they look at something like that, yeah, well, that's pretty neat, but, what's the big deal? Well, this next video down in line is another not-so-big deal. It's another solar-powered motor that's built like a cylinder horizontally, and it has solar panels on the outside of it that, when it's out in the sunlight, as long as the sun's hitting the top or any side of that, this thing will continue to turn. And in the video, you'll notice that he does have to give it a kind of a boost before it starts, and then it runs on its own. But once he gets it started the first time, the solar panels have enough energy left in them that it'll self-start itself after that. Alright, so that's pretty much all the videos that I posted up in there. And the point that I wanted to get to at all this Well, I see a lot of individuals out there on YouTube that are doing a lot of nifty little projects, and they show people different anomalies and basically how to make a basic battery, such as a saltwater battery. But every time I watch these videos, I see something that most people overlook. Like the wise guy in the chat portion of the video there will put some sort of smart aleck comment in there saying something ignorant like, well, you know, that's so inefficient, or, you know, that's that, what good's that? That ain't free energy, or, you know, just whatever. And sometimes they get really rude and filthy, you know, mouth language and that kind of stuff, and it's just kind of counterproductive to everything. But the folks out there that are really interested in alternative energy are really interested in these little projects like that, because all these projects by themselves, no, they're not going to run your house. But if you take all these ideas and you put them in conjunction with one another, let's take, for example, my redneck wind turbine. It's made out of a 50-gallon plastic barrel and two bicycle wheels and an old bed frame. All right, well, let's say I hook a solar panel to every side of that in between the wind fins on there. And I got this thing out there hooked to an electric motor on a shaft with really good bearings. So not only when the wind is blowing, but even when the wind isn't blowing, the solar hitting those panels will actually keep that turbine going at all times. While that turbine's turning, even on a sunny day with no wind, you're generating power. Now, is it going to be a massive, substantial amount of power? It depends on how you engineer this. It depends on how much torque you can pull up out of there. But just those two alone, adding in conjunction with everything else that I just kind of mentioned right there, such as the salt water battery. You know, it's really super simple to get a hold of salt water. I mean, go out there near the ocean. The earth is 3/4 covered in salt water. And you got plenty of salt water for a battery. Or you go to your local store if you're in the freshwater area, and you buy you a little 79-cent deal of salt and mix it with some water. Now you got salt water. You can find these copper-plated plates, whatever, aluminum, you can find those just about everywhere. Don't have to be, you know, those two particular materials. It could be, you know, just about any two dissimilar metals. You could build a huge salt water battery that could be refreshed every so often with fresh salt and make it out of a 50-gallon drum. You know, you got tons and tons of plates up inside this battery. And as that wind turbine's turning around, that is also assisted, electrically assisted by solar panels, then you're charging that salt water battery bank up. Now, just those three little anomalies that I pointed out are pluses towards the system. Now, let's say you take it even a step further, and you use a little bit of centrifugal force. The power of centrifugal force is such as that whenever a kid gets on a doggone merry-go-round and you get that thing a-spinning, once that thing gets up to speed, it'll drag you around trying to stop the thing. They're almost impossible to stop by yourself with the centrifugal force kicked in, especially those old ones made out of steel. And so, if you take that centrifugal force knowledge and you add it to that little solar powered motor that Ludic Science did, his is basically a long rod that there's a magnet underneath there, and there's two coils on each end of this thing that basically, you know, are like a teeter-totter. They counter effect each other. You know, gravity's going to kick in, so now you're going to use the force of gravity to pull this thing down, and as soon as one of those coils passes the magnet, the solar panels are already energizing the system through the coils, and the magnets will repel across the coils will repel across the magnet, flipping the rod around. So now you got centrifugal force, you've got gravity working with you, you've got the saltwater battery that we were talking about. You got solar, you got wind, and then to help the process yet even more, while all these other things are spinning, you can use what Lidmotor did over there in his project, where he took the aluminum and put it inside the jar and basically spun a magnet past that and got that thing to spinning. And while this thing was spinning, it produced enough torque that he was spinning another neodymium magnet on the other side, and had a wireless energy system set up where that one magnet was spinning another magnet inside a coil, lighting up the two light bulbs inside the eyes of this little deal he made. He calls Maggie. It's a coil with two lights. It looks like it's just neat. You just got to see it. Anyway, you take all these things in conjunction with one another, and you got free energy. It's as simple as that, you know. And majority of what I just mentioned right here is stuff that you could get for free. Raymond always brought me two of these panels out here, these solar panels. They had stripped off the aluminum on there, and the glass is all cracked up. And I haven't done nothing to those things. I haven't tried to treat them or seal up the cracks or anything. And those things are still producing electricity. So you could literally take these things, because they were rolled up like a carpet, and you could roll them around the side of a doggone barrel and make one of those solar-powered wind generators, solar-powered motor. So the barrel itself, you know, you might have to go out and buy some. In my neighborhood, you can buy them for about $10-15 a piece, unless you find somebody's getting rid of one. And, you know, they're like really dirt cheap if you have to buy them. But old bicycle wheels have bearings in them. And if you put all this stuff together, you got a redneck wind turbine like the one I put out there. And, man, you wouldn't believe half the comments that I got on that thing. Majority of the comments were positive. They liked the idea. They liked the repurposing of the old barrel. And they thought it was creative. The wise guys of the bunch were all hollering about, oh, that won't work because this. You know, I'm so tired of hearing people tell me why things won't work. You know, put a doggone video up there and show why it doesn't work. Maybe, just maybe, in the process of you doing this video, you're going to find out something. You're going to learn something. And if you learn something from that cruddy old video of mine that is going to benefit you, that was the purpose of the video to begin with. To get people out there to thinking outside the box, besides all the, you know, stuff that they learn inside doggone textbooks from school. I mean, anybody can read a textbook and spew it out like liberal propaganda, say whatever the heck they, you know, they heard. You know, anybody can be a mockingbird. What do you call those other ones? The ones that talked. Minor bird, or I don't know. Either way, you can repeat something that somebody else said really easy. All right? But to think something, a thought of your own, and then say it, you know, that's a bigger deal. Thomas posted a link in the chat room there. Go check out Revolution Green Hydrolite Releaser. That's a video, I assume, or an article?
It's an article. It's more than an article, though. It's something that's coming out. I don't know if you know who Mark Danzy is, but he's been working with a team for a while now to basically put out a really affordable, easy-to-repair battery system and light system, so that people who in third world countries that are using kerosene to light their home at night will be able to stop doing that. Not only will it not have them burning all this noxious fuel all over the place and having to breathe the fumes from it, but it won't cost anywhere near as much as the kerosene is costing them.
Well, that sounds great and beneficial, because if you can do anything to improve somebody's quality of life, that's what it's all about, right?
Right.
And so, with that said, if you guys go over there and check out Revolution Green, there's links posted all over ShazizRadio.com All right. There's Zero Fossil Fuels out there doing research. Russ from RWG Research, he's out there doing research. Lid Motor and Laser Saber and all these other guys out there on YouTube's out there. We just got tons and tons of links and posting more all the time of different researchers out there. Just go out and watch what they're doing, people. See what kind of research they're doing. You know, don't just overlook something because, you know, you'd think it's going to be inefficient. You know, an automobile without no rubber tires on it is just a yardang. It's sitting there. It ain't going nowhere. All right? You could put some metal wheels on there, but friction's going to tear them up before, and you're going to... You ever rode, when you was a kid, did you ever ride any of those old metal roller skates? They had the metal wheels on them?
I think I remember something like that.
Yeah, those doggone things, man, they'll rattle your teeth right out of your face, man. There's a vibration from your feet all the way up through your body. And if you hit a pebble, you're going to face plant. That's all there is to it. But anyway, people, Zero Fossil Fuel, he actually has a live stream, and there's a link on the webpage that you can jump on there, and you can actually watch him do experiments real time. All right, and there's it just goes on and on. And if you got an alternative energy website out there and you're wanting people to come visit your YouTube channel or whatever, bring it over here and I'll post a link for you. You know, I'm just trying to help everybody get things done. In the Mad Science podcast page, there's all kinds of old shows on there. The Knights of the Round Table has a whole bunch of old shows on the podcast page. Virtual Labs, basically what... doggone it, I just said this there a second ago, Zero Fossil Fuels doing is what we're trying to accomplish over here at ShazizRadio.com, where when we're doing experiments, you can watch it real time. You'll be able to see the mistakes as well as the positives, you know. So that's where one of some of the best ways to learn is to, you know, make mistakes, get in there and experiment and, you know, blow things up. Just don't put your eye out or something like that. You know what I mean? So, anyway, there's a couple little videos in there that I mentioned that, you know, if you take one by themselves, maybe not that doggone big of a deal. But we got bearings out there and methods by which we can make things so precision that they run true, you know. They don't vibrate themselves to death. And if you had something that was perfectly balanced and, you know, use the forces of nature, gravity, centrifugal force, you can spin something up like them hard drive motors. Those things are so doggone precision that you can sit there and spin them and they'll stay spinning for a while. As long as you don't have it under load, that thing will sit there and spin for quite some time. Now, that's precision bearings. And that's running level and true. It has to. It's in a computer hard drive. It can't be wobbling around and banging around. Otherwise, it's going to tear itself up and your data's going to get lost.
Mm-hmm.
But we have all the capabilities to do this. There are machine shops all over this world. And if somebody has an idea and they come to you and say, hey, you know, you got these tools over here. Is there any chance you could help me with this one design? And in return, I'll help you out, you know, with something you need or whatever. Or, yep. You know, make it so that if this thing ever makes it to the market, that you're an equal partner in the deal just for helping me build the doggone thing. You see what I mean?
Or even just having access to the knowledge and whatnot.
Yeah.
So,
like, here's the deal. A machine shop, a lot of the machine shops, they got some big old 2 and 3 phase electrical systems running heavy duty equipment. Imagine if you could at the very least supplement their electric bill to where they would make a whole lot more money because they're not paying it all out in electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would think that anybody out there who had a business would want to make more money, and if they had somebody who could show them how that they could actually save themselves a lot of money in electricity, that they'd be interested in. That would be a worthy investment, you know, time and money-wise.
Right, adds to their bottom line.
Yeah.
Same amount of work, less cost, you know.
Well, that's the key to me. You know, yep. I got to try to get a hold of this guy. I forgot his doggone name, and he was working on a deal, and he's trying to get the BTUs down on a water treatment system that he's working on. And I got a way, perfect way to do it for him, but I haven't heard from him since. But, you know, if he could get that system down, that's the last drawback to his system. Otherwise, the other thing works perfectly. Now, it could be a case that while I was there and I gave him the design, he's already used it and moved right along and just kind of forgot all about me. But, you know, as long as he used it, that's a good thing.
Right.
You know, I wasn't looking to get rich, and I actually told him that. I said, look, I'm not looking to make no money off this deal. If you just, if it helps you out, benefits you, that's good. That's mm-hmm. what I do. But, you know, until we get actual people to the table to do these things, you know, if you got access to a machine shop, man, you're standing on a gold mine if you got somebody that can run those doggone machines.
Right.
You know, when I went out there to talk to that one machine shop, it was like they kind of have this attitude, but the only ones that they will work with are people that are going to buy a lot of product, and, you know, there's no... It ain't worth their time or effort to set up a machine to make one or two pieces.
Well, right, and you have to understand from their point of view, time is money.
Yep.
Every minute that rolls by, their body is not going to stop consuming food. Their electric bills are not going to go down and stop running. And every time you have to stop what you're doing and reorganize everything you're doing, that's wasted time. So when you build a part and you only make one part, you're spending an awful lot of time switching to start making the new part, the next new part. If you don't have to change anything, though, and you just keep running the machine over and over and over again to make another part, you get it's a lot more efficient.
Yeah, well, so...
You know, not to mention wear and tear on tools is reduced by not having to constantly change the direction on them and whatnot.
So all of that's reasonable and an understanding, but from the guy's point of view such as mine, you know, if it cost me $30,000-$40,000 to get this person's attention to build one single part...
Right.
Then, you know, then I got an issue.
It's not going to get built.
Yeah, it's not going to get built. And I refuse to ask for money from anybody else, so, you know, it's a slow process of trying to find something that's already manufactured that can do the same job, if you understand what I'm trying to say.
Well, that's actually a very useful way of going about doing it, so that they don't have to stop and retool to do whatever it is you're trying to do. If they're already making millions of something for another purpose, and you can repurpose it for your project, off-the-shelf parts are the best way to go.
Well, and that's why it takes me so long to get things done, is that it's a constant hunt around for just the right size tube or whatever, you know, because mm-hmm. otherwise, if I put it together and it's all, you know, wobbly or whatever, it's not going to be efficient, and the gain that I did have by the idea...
Lost.
Yeah, it's going to be lost.
Might be harder to tell if you even had a gain.
Yeah.
Whereas if you saw that game, then it would actually, you know, promote a reason for actually going after it and trying to improve upon it.
And that's why I'd like to get with one of these research groups, like, you know, maybe like how the Geek Group set their system up, where they got all the machinery in there and they bring a bunch of people there and they work on ideas and projects together.
You mean like I was talking about?
Yeah,
having
exactly.
A
like
shop where people can come in and just basically throw down a few dollars and get to use the whole shop?
Yeah.
Get
exactly
together with
like
some
that.
Other people, have a little get together every weekend. You know, everybody gets together and have a little bit of, you know, something to drink, a little something to eat, and just basically chew the fat for a while, so everybody gets to know each other. That way, you can meet the other people that are in your that are coming and using the shop too. And you can swap skills. You know, you're great with electronics, but you're not great with running a mill or a lathe. You can always find somebody that is, and I'm sure they're going to have a project, if that's what you guys are all there for, is working on research, to go ahead and, you know, couple together and help them with the electronic stuff while they help you with the machinery portion of things.
my best case scenario out there, if there's somebody out there who's like really super good at organizing, you know, getting things together and getting things set up, go out there, and if you want to start yourself some sort of business, go out there and build a shop like that. Get people together and raise funds and build a shop like that. Once you got that thing built, if you like what I'm talking about, invite me to come over and share some of my ideas with you and build them. You know, myself personally, I'm not really good at the manufacturing portion, and as far as sales, I couldn't sell a gold tooth to a pimp, man. You know? That was rude.
That's racist.
Yeah. But it's true, though. I couldn't sell nothing, man. I pretty much got to give things away in order to get any money off of them. I know what it's worth, and I know that if you, let's say you got an electric generator, it's probably worth $500 or $600, and everybody else knows they're pretty expensive too. If I try to sell it for $500 or $600, I ain't gonna get nobody to buy it. You know, but
sitting there forever. Well, that's because the economy is not doing very well.
Well, the moment I go out there,
and you're not trumping them, you're not sitting there talking them to death until they're finally so tired of listening to you that they're willing to just give you anything to shut you up.
The moment I go out there and I say, "Yeah, $75 or $100 cash, and it's yours, man," the money flies so fast that it'll make your head spin.
That's how it works.
Yeah. So
that's exactly how it works.
In business, I'd be taking a loss.
Yep. Well, unless you bought that thing, that $500 or $600 thing for like $50 from China.
Oh yeah, if I can see
now you can see why all of Trump's clothes that he's selling at Macy's are made in China. You know.
Yeah, if I could stumble into deals like that, because back in the old days, I used to go around to thrift stores and I'd buy these not working radios and stereos and stuff like that. And a lot of times I got lucky. You know, I'd buy them like really cheap, anywhere from $30 on down to 99 cents for like a little radio, you know. And I'd take them home and I'd tinker with them, get them working. And then I'd turn around and I'd take them down to job sites where the construction workers are always dropping their radios off the roof or the ladder. And I'll sell them to them for maybe $3-4 all the way up to $30 or $40, depending on how good of a radio it is. I couldn't keep these things fast enough, you know. But I had a pretty good little deal going on there, because every time I went to a construction site, I had a carload of radios. They'd be gathered around buying them all up, you know, want to listen to something while they're working. Or, you know, there's different things out there that people don't know what they were. You know, I bought a $600 video mixer at a doggone flea market for $30, and nobody knew what it was, you know. But,
and you said you couldn't sell nothing.
Well, but the thing about it is, I got it cheap enough, just like you were talking about with Trump's clothes. I got it cheap enough that even if I did wasn't able to sell it, you know, what did I lose? 99 cents or, worst case,
right,
$30?
Right.
You know, in that realm, in the junk realm, I could probably do a decent living, but, you know, I'm talking, if you want to get out to a mainstream market or something like that, or you really want to get some sort of idea come to reality by a machine shop or a manufacturing company, you know, that is going to be precision and made right, you know, all I was doing was repairing somebody else's technology. I wasn't doing nothing spectacular as far as I'm concerned.
And there ain't nothing wrong with that.
Well,
nothing wrong with that, man.
Either
way, it's actually a great idea, because you're basically keeping more resources and energy being wasted to make another one, you know?
Yeah, it's recycling and repurposing.
Yep, upcycling.
Yeah.
Repair, you know, it's good whenever people basically build things to last, so that you can go ahead and actually repair them and put them right back into service instead of having to buy another one, you know?
I'm going to make me a note.
Throw the old one away.
So you're going to hear me typing, probably. But you called that upcycling?
Yeah.
I'm going to make me a note because I want to find, there's a couple websites out there that I love to have the links to. Mm-hmm. I'd like to find any links that pertain to recycling, upcycling, or repurposing. I'm typing this out while I'm trying to say it. I said upcycling, recycling, repurposing. And there's one called Free Something.
Free Cycle?
Yeah, Free Cycle. There are websites out there where people got things in their garage and they want to get rid of it, and instead of just throwing it in the trash, they offer them on their websites for free. You know, mm-hmm. could be a case where you just got to go pick it up.
Come and get it.
So, this is what I'd like to do. I'd like to get a bunch of links like that and post them in the Shazoo's Mad Science store, the free section in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you people have access to see that there are people out there that are pretty much giving stuff away. And 9 times out of 10, and I don't care what community you're in, people always got things that they're trying to get rid of. You drive down the road and somebody's got an old washing machine or a toaster or whatever, microwave sitting on the front deal out there by the waiting for the trash man to pick it up. I usually go up to the door and ask them because I don't want people to think I'm just, you know, randomly digging in their trash. You know what I'm saying? Hey, man, I see you throwing that away. Would you mind if I have it? And there's a lot of times that people see that I want it, and they'll say, well, how much you give me for it, you know? So you're getting ready to throw it in the trash, and hey, you want to sell it? I'll give you $5. And then the haggling begins. But, you know, that's what I'm saying, but there are people throw tons of stuff away. And material-wise, you know, most cities got deals where they'll recycle plastics and aluminum and stuff like that, and then people just kind of just give up on the idea when they find out that they're not really doing much with it, you know. Some communities actually do stuff with it, but for the most part, it's kind of like it's a feel-good thing. You put your plastic in one and your metal in the other, and, you know, you're saving the planet kind of thing.
Right.
But if that's as far as it goes, and then when you get it out there and it's not really being any kind of beneficial or whatever.
Right. It's not cost-effective, so they start just throwing it all back into the trash.
Yeah.
They've been caught doing that more than a few times.
But check this out. Wouldn't it be cool if it was set up so that, let's say I got a use for a whole bunch of aluminum cans. I got my own smelter at home, and I need some aluminum. I could go around, because it's setting in the pre-cycle kind of system there, that you know, I wouldn't even have to knock on the door. Neighbors see me that you know, I need those aluminum cans. And so I dump them in the back of my truck and go on down and get some more. And even if it was some individual that was just using it to actually go to a recycling plant and make them a few dollars to buy them some food or something like that. You see what I'm saying? You could get some folks up off the couch after making some money because you've already sorted it for them and you want to get rid of it. They're willing to take it, and then they can go down there and recycle it, get a few bucks, and it actually makes it back into the system. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
See, it's not that we don't have the ideas. You know, I got tons and tons of ideas. You know, to try to get people to sit around and pay attention to these ideas and start enacting them, that's the key right there. That's where you need somebody who's good at organizing. You know? You know, if you need somebody with some mechanical brain going on, then you come to get me. If you need somebody with chemistry, you go get Thomas, that kind of thing. You know, and there's some folks out there that are multi-talented that know a whole lot about a whole lot of different stuff, you know.
There's a whole lot of people out there that think they know a lot about stuff and don't know anything about anything.
Yeah, a jack of all trades and a master of none. But you understand what I'm trying to point out here. These networks that we're talking about, they're not going to build themselves. They need to get some folks together, helping each other out, and start, you know, do it on your own. Fundraise on your own. Build it. Build a building. Heck, if you could manage to get a doggone building, and then you could manage to get some inventors in there to fill that building up, there's probably scrap guys all over the place that'd be willing to either help you out with some parts to work with, or maybe even you could buy a few from him. You're going to get them cheaper than you would if you went out to buy them from somebody else, you know. Buy them for whatever the weight would have been if he would have took them to the scrapyard. He saves him, what, 10 or 20 miles going to the scrapyard by just driving over to your place and selling it to you.
Mm-hmm.
See what I mean? There's where the common sense should come in a long time ago. We'd already had all this issue resolved.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm really excited about this idea that I just mentioned here about I'm going to remodify the old redneck wind turbine with some pretty decent little solar panels and see if I can't get them to actually run an electric motor so that even when the wind isn't blowing, that thing's still going to be turning. Now, I might even add with it some sort of basically where it heats up a certain material, and that heat is guided up in through the center of that turbine to assist it in turning as well. You know what I'm saying? So, anyway, the ideas are out there. There's tons and tons of ideas out there if you just take advantage of them. And with that said, you know, there ain't no reason. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it, because we're surrounded in it. We're in a sea of energy. There's enough water on this planet to produce tons and tons of energy. You know, it don't stop.
Mm-hmm.
So, you got any new projects you want to talk about, Thomas?
Not personally.
Not personally. Well, personally, I blew up a couple circuit boards that cost me about $5 a piece to get here, working on some ideas. I wasn't too happy about it. I went out and bought another one to replace the first one that I broke, burn up, and because instead of paying attention to the milliamp ratings, I put it on 1 amp and it just started smoking. I wonder why that was. Anyway, I was all frustrated, jumped back on eBay, bought another one, have it on the way, and doggone it, it's the same doggone day I didn't burn up another one. And so I'm still down one. One on the way, and now I got to buy another one. So they needed 4 for the project.
Right. I don't know, I was just happy I took my, had a bunch of stuff inside of my wet dry vac that was blowing all over the place every time I turned it on, so I tore the whole thing down and completely washed everything out with it and got it all put back together. So, for once, they actually put it together with some screws and whatnot. There was only a couple clips. I had to figure out where they were at to disconnect it to open it all up.
Yeah.
Tools need to be built more like that, where you just, you know, take nuts and bolts and screws apart, pull all the bad parts out, and either replace them or fix them and put them back together, you know? Stop throwing things away.
Yeah, that's it.
Got too much trash.
They make things pretty much temporary, throwaway. They don't even recycle them. They're cheaply made. What is that word I'm looking for? Basically, throwaway cars and throwaway electronics, you know?
Disposable society?
Yeah. On one hand, you're hollering about so-called man-made climate change and pollution. On the other hand, you're throwing crap in the dump. Now, I've seen this a million times, man. I saw somebody one time had a Go Green sticker on the doggone back of their car, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm following them along and I'm thinking, well, you know, that's pretty cool. That's an internal combustion engine that has a nifty little Go Green sticker on the back, so, you know, maybe they got the idea started anyway. And so, as further we got along, and I'm still following behind, and I'm looking, and, you know, and I'm thinking about, you know, all the solar panels and wind generators and stuff that they must have, or maybe they're doing some sort of eco house or something like that. You know, I'm trying to just visualize what this individual in this really nice car is going green about. Doggone if I didn't get probably about 4 or 5 miles down the doggone road and that turkey threw a bunch of trash out in the middle of the street. Well, hold on a second. I thought this was a go green person. You see the hypocrisy there, Thomas? Did I lose you?
No, I do. I do see that. I mean, I've probably been accused of that myself, though, because when I have something that's biodegradable, I don't go and put it in a trash can so it can end up in a landfill. I toss it out somewhere where I know it's going to get rotten and turned back into fertilizer for some plants nearby, you know?
Well, this was probably like a fast food restaurant bag full of whatever they had left over.
A bunch of styrofoam.
Styrofoam and
boxes,
plastic.
Plastic containers and plastic straws and whatnot.
Yeah. Hey, save
the planet.
Or
cigarette butts.
By the way, throw that trash out the window there.
Yeah, cigarette butts. Well, you don't know who put that sticker on the back of the car. They could have been somebody else's car and they were driving their car. Could have also been, you know, somebody came along and stuck it on the back of the car because they're trying to advertise.
Well, maybe they saw him throw trash out before.
What's that?
Maybe they saw him throw trash out before and figured, you know, hey, I'll put a gold green sign on the back.
I doubt they were even doing that. They probably literally just, if somebody else put it on there, probably going by just sticking them on every car, you know.
Maybe, but
that's like somebody sneaking into the police department and putting an F the police sticker on the back of every police car bumper, you know.
You know,
the police aren't okay with that, but here they are driving around until they realize it's back there with that hanging off the back end of their car, you know.
That's kind of funny, man.
Yeah, or F the pigs or something like that, you know. But, actually, I know some people that put some pig stickers on the back of cop cars, but the pig sticker was actually for a band called Pig, so they just thought it was funny.
Well, if you're going to be a slob, don't have a go green sticker on your car. Even if somebody else sticks it there, peel it off or something. I don't know. I'm just saying.
That's just it, though. The person throwing that crap out the window is most likely wearing a Nike t-shirt and a Trump baseball cap or some other, you know, a band baseball cap or some company logo baseball cap, like a Chevy baseball cap or something. So they've already made themselves a big billboard for all kinds of other stuff. Why not let somebody go ahead and slap a bumper stick on the back of their car and, you know, ride around with it on there?
Well, you know, hey, look, if you're going to be out there saying save the trees with a wooden stick, a paper sign, and, you know, there you go, paper or plastic. I just got to point out ridiculous when I see it, even if it is
what if you look on the corner of their sign and it says made with 100% recycled paper?
Well, then that might give them a few brownie points.
Maybe the stick is made out of a house that was torn down. They recycled all the lumber from it.
Well,
because it couldn't be used for 2x4s anymore, they chopped it up into thinner sticks so that they could use it for something else, and they said, hey, we'll use some of those. Those are recycled wood.
Well, they might get a few brownie points, all right? First, I'm going to get... Look, okay, next time there's a doggone Save the Planet rally, I'm going to show up with my camera, and I'm going to say, hey, look, let me ask you a question, sir or ma'am, depending on, you know, your visual view. I'd say, hey, let me ask you a question. Okay, well, that paper you got the sign on there, is that recycled paper? Yes, it is. Well, you get 1 point. What about that wooden stick? Is that like recycled wood there? Well, no. Okay, well, at least you get the one check for the plus.
Yeah, one positive, one negative, so you balanced out there. You're brownie neutral here.
Brownie neutral. I'm just saying, if you're gonna go green, then go. Do it.
Yeah, you know, what would be the funniest is to show up with a bunch of signs that are basically strapped down to branches off of trees that, you know, basically they went around and found them laying on the ground and picked them up and used them, you know, after a storm or something.
Yeah, majority of the, that would be a good idea, you know. And then look, hey, I picked up a dead stick to show you're killing the planet. Mm-hmm. All right, well, that would be brilliant. Okay, I can get on board with that.
Use some recycled cuts of cardboard and get some rust off of an old rusty vehicle or something, and a little bit of water, and make your ink out of that, and paint "Save the Planet" on that with that.
Yeah, majority of the doggone liberal college kids that are out there hollering about carbon emission and man-made climate change and all this and save the planet. I wonder how they're getting to and fro school, man.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, you know, ride a bus or ride a SUV.
There's all kinds of ridiculousness, and people don't think about it. Or they look at it this way. It's there already, so I'm going to use it to try to prove my point so that it won't be there anymore. You know, they'll stop making more, you know?
Yeah, but you want to impress me. If you want to save the planet, get you some hip sandals and tie-dye t-shirt.
That's just
and walk.
They're not interested in impressing you unless their impression is going to get you to, you know, to try to help stop the process that they're concerned about. If they really care about it, and not just there because they got a crush on somebody else that's there.
Well,
that's a typical thing. The guy show up because they got a crush on some girl that's going, and maybe she's there because she's got a crush on some guy that's there, and it's just a big chain of people who don't really care about what they're there for. They care about something else.
Yeah, maybe just want to be part of the crowd. But, you know.
That too.
Either way, if you're at a bonfire and the fire is too hot, but you're still putting wood on it, you know, then scoot back and stop putting wood on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's common sense, but some people just ain't got no common sense. That's a fire. Let's throw some gas on that one.
Yeah, some people just want to watch the world burn.
Yeah. Some people just want to be out there just to have something to yell about and feel like they're trying to do something proactive, when in reality, you know, if you're going out there slopping pig's blood all over, you know, abortion clinics or something like that, what have you accomplished? If you're out there throwing red paint on people walking out of those same buildings, what have you accomplished?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it don't matter which one of the doggone talking points or controversies going on in the world, you can always find pros and cons on both sides, and everybody sitting around bickering about it ain't getting nothing done.
Nope.
You know?
That's how it works.
If you're going to holler about saving the planet and your automobile that you use to go to these rallies is leaking transmission fluid and oil and whatever.
Shazoos, it's as simple as this, okay? The same thing applies to that. Just imagine the terminology and what each of the words actually mean, and then just figure out how they basically apply in a similar context to what you're saying now. Those who are talking about something that can't, saying that something can't be done, need to shut up and let the people who are in the middle of doing those things finish attempting to do them, you know?
Yeah. You know, get together and do it the right way. I mean, man, that doggone...
And you know the fastest way that you can stop telling other people what they can't do? Start looking at the things that you think you can do and go do them.
Yeah.
Shut your mouth and start moving your hands, you know. Start shuffling those feet. Do something, you know.
I can't remember what do you remember what the name of that one really big protest was where they just literally went out and just, there was garbage everywhere when this protest was over with. Occupy Wall Street or something like that.
Oh, yeah, Occupy Wall Street.
Yeah, now...
The Occupy movement.
First off, you're protesting the wrong doggone people. Wall Street don't care because all they can do is get on the phone and say, look, there's folks out here creating a ruckus and trash in the joint. Can you come over and beat them toothless and pepper spray them and throw them in jail, please, and thank you?
Mm-hmm.
And it's done.
And then they go contact a politician and make it illegal for you to go and protest on that street again.
Yeah.
You gotta stand in a little box in the corner where no one cares, you know, they can't hear you.
Not to mention, somebody got to clean up all that trash you just left behind.
Mm-hmm.
So you just screwed your own community, man. You really want to go out and protest? Go out there and protest the ones that are selling you the trash that you keep on buying. you know?
Well, the easiest way to protest somebody selling you a bunch of junk you don't want sold is to stop buying it.
Yeah.
Stop buying it. The second most important thing you can do to fix that problem, figure out what it is people are buying it for and find an alternative and start selling the alternative.
You know what the key about the hypocrisy of that whole deal is that the average Joe who wants to boycott something will still go out and buy it because, well, they're still selling it anyway, you know, instead
of... Well, that's why I said this is the logic that I see that people are lacking too, okay? People wanted to do that with the oil companies, right? So they said, nobody buy gas this day. You know, let's send them a message that, you know, we mean business, right? And the first time they did it, it had a serious impact on the price of the gas. That's why they were doing this, because they wanted the price to come down. They were tired of being price gouged, right? But then, the next day, when everybody had to go to work and they realized that they were running low on gas because they hadn't bought gas the day before, and any running or anything they had to do ended up eating up that gas that they had in reserve waiting. So they went out, and it was a massive purchase of gas the next day. There was a surge of gas purchasing, so they were looking at the end result by the end of the week, and the gas companies were like, well, we sold the same amount of gas this week as we sold the week before. What does it matter if they decide not to buy from us for a day or two? Screw them. We're not lowering the price anymore.
Yep.
Okay? Well, each one of those companies has their own independent ledgers and books that they have to keep. So, if you really want to make a difference, you do something like you pick a company and when you send that message out, you don't just say, oh, nobody buy gas this day. Instead, you go ahead and send out a message and say, hey, everybody don't buy from this company until they lower the price, and they do, you know, they bring it down by this much. Okay, this is our target price. Nobody goes back to that company and buys anything from them until they drop that price. Okay, for a while, you're probably going to see, since there's a cartel there, that they're going to all start lowering their price in unison because that one company's crying uncle saying, look, we got to do something. These people have to either come back and start buying from us, or we're going to have to give in to them. So either you have to lower the price with us, or we're going to have to break away from you guys. Okay, so you'll see the price come down, then you pick another company. It's like, it's still not low enough. Let's say it's 25 cents. We want it lower. So you send out another mass email, and you stop buying from the next company in that list until they come down that extra 25 cents even less. Sooner or later, one of those companies is going to say, you know what? You guys aren't working with us. We're going under. We're lowering the price. We can afford to do it. We're going to lower the price. And they will have broken that cartel's trust in each other. No one will be able to trust each other anymore. So now when you squeeze that pig, it's going to squeal immediately.
There you go, man.
And you can find out, if you're not sure what they can sell it for, just keep lowering the price until one of the companies goes out of business. It ain't going to hurt nothing. All those people that are laid off will be hired right back whenever that company is sold off to one of the other companies. Meanwhile, the companies that are left standing are going to be like, holy crap, we better not piss these people off, because if they do, they're going to drive us right out of business.
Well,
I don't want my company to be the one that goes under. I'll tell you what, when they start squeaking about lowering price, we're going to lower the price. We're still making money. That's all that matters, you know?
Yeah, and everybody can make a fair and decent and earn honest living out there, you know?
It's just... Well, and this is the thing, okay? Oil companies, Walmart, whatever company you got a grudge against because of their prices or because of their practices to get the prices that they get to people or whatever it is that they're doing that's making you mad, understand there's somebody else behind the scenes that's making all that happen. It's not that company's fault that they're operating within a broken system, and therefore they have to operate using broken tactics. So if you start forcing these companies to... fly straight and narrow and start giving some, you know, in order to basically allow them to do things that they really need to do, start giving some transparency, what's going to happen is you're now going to begin lifting the curtain behind the man and seeing the man behind the curtain that's causing all this problem.
And that's the way it needs to be.
Yep. You know,
don't waste your time out there protesting the doggone government. The government's got the guns, they got the power and authority to beat you toothless and have you tossed up in jail.
Right. Now listen, though. This is the thing. If you were to start and push, because everybody's sick and tired of paying for high gas prices back whenever the prices were up, and they're still kind of high. I mean, we're thinking they're lower because we're so used to them being so much higher. We've had the temperature turn back down to a little under the boiling point, but it's still hot.
Yeah.
You know, and we're like, wow, this is actually feeling pretty good because, you know, it's not over the boiling point anymore, right? But the point is, we could have it lowered some more until it's room temperature. It wouldn't be that hard. And if you can prove to the masses by pushing a program like that out to where you can manage to get the consumers, the people buying, to work together long enough to force one of these large companies like Exxon or Sunoco or Phillips 66 to knuckle under and do the right thing by their customers, it won't be long before people say, you know what, we should be able to do this with every company out there. We don't like what Walmart's doing. They're laying people off. They're not paying them well enough. And, you know, they're causing this place to close down by using the financial leverage they have to destroy companies here locally or force them to basically slowly go under while they basically take advantage of them to get, you know, cheap prices and nobody's being able to afford to work. We'll just go ahead and start torquing the wrench on them.
Yep.
Eventually, like I said, you keep torquing a wrench on all these guys, the proof is going to come out of the pudding, and we'll begin seeing that it's actually the Federal Reserve causing all this problem, and these world bankers that just got a huge bailout whenever they basically loaned too much money out on houses. And they still got to keep the houses, too, on top of it. It's like they got paid for all those houses. Like, how would you feel if you went to the bank and you paid them everything you owed them on your house, and then they still showed up and foreclosed on your house and said, no, you still can't have the house?
Yeah.
Because that is exactly what happened.
Yep.
When the government handed them all that money to bail those banks out, they still foreclosed on those people's houses.
They got to sell them once, twice, three times.
And this is the thing, though. Where do you think the money came from? The money came from the taxpayers, the people who were trying to buy those houses. So now they have the burden of paying for a house so they can pay for a house. Because they got to pay the taxes to pay the bankers that got the house. And they still have to earn their money to still go back in there and try to refinance and buy a house again. Because they got foreclosed on. Okay? So, if they had really, honestly given a crap about the populace of the United States, the people who was working in Washington that handed those bailouts, they would have handed those bailouts in the form of checks to each individual house owner with the bank's name on it, for the amount that they owe on their house, or a portion of that amount. Whatever, just divide it all up so everybody gets that same amount of money they were going to give to those banks, give it to the people who own the houses in a way that they have to pay for their house. That way the people get to keep their house and the banks get bailed out all at once.
Yeah, see, now that's what I was saying back in the day. That would have been the right thing to do.
Yep, but they didn't do that because that's not what the bankers wanted. Because they want everything, and they don't want to give you anything.
Well, you got to get this message out to people out there. You got to get these average Joes to understand. And that's the fact is, these companies out there, they know the people aren't going to pay attention to stuff like this. They know, and even if a few people do, that it's not significant enough to even put a dent in their wallet. And they always find
it. Unless we all start pushing to tell other people, let it spread like a virus.
Yeah.
These
people out there talking about save the planet are, in my view, they're hypocrites. You know, I mean, I'm sure there's probably some real hardcore eco-friendly go green kind of people that actually talk the talk and walk the walk kind of deal, but for the most part, you know, if you're supposedly saving the planet and you're still driving a car that you're complaining that supposedly is causing the whole mess along with the industry and all that, you're still doing what it is that you said you didn't want.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Practice what you preach is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And we've got all the doggone technology out there to do what it is that we've been talking about, yet you got knucklehead after knucklehead coming out of the woodworks to mock and ridicule while never, ever putting anything productive on the table as an alternative.
And that's the whole point, is if you really don't think that something is going to work, don't say anything, walk away and go find something that does work and participate in it. Don't be a cheerleader. Participate. You know, don't be a troll cheerleader where you're basically there doing the opposite of cheerleading and you're trying to cause them psychological distress. just so you can get a reaction out of them. Just move on, man. If you, you know the old adage, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Yeah. With that said, you know, I don't like to toot my own horn, but I'd like to at least think that I'm trying to do something positive by putting all this information and keeping this website and radio station up and running all like that. I'd like to at least think that I'm trying to do at least part, you know, my part in the whole deal. And so when people come around, and I'm only human, you know, smart aleks and wisecracks and filthy language aimed at me, you know, it takes its toll after a while. And there's been a few times I've been up and ready just to walk away and just say the heck with it. But see, yep, that's the problem with all these people that do this kind of stuff out there. They want the reaction. They want to discourage you. And so when they mm-hmm. when they finally succeed and all the good, smart individuals go into their own little world and just let the rest of the world go to heck, you know.
Yeah, they either give up or they get together and go form their own Atlantis and leave them all sitting there with no technology to keep running their life.
then everybody loses in that scenario, with the exception of the brilliant ones that went on their own island and built their own world and said to heck with the craziness on the outside.
Right.
You know.
Well, there's actually a story about a tribe down in South America that burned all their bridges and retracted from the rest of the world, and they said, "We will come back when little brother is ready to listen."
Yeah. You know,
because they were all about basically working with the planet in unison with it in order to get the most out of everything without having to damage anything. That, you know, there's basically a way to do almost everything you do without having a loss.
And we did a little segment on the Mad Science Show here a while back where we talked about, there isn't no such thing as waste products, because everything out there, like I mentioned about when you're burning firewood, you know, everybody's hollering about firewood. You know, they're actually talking about making it so you can't burn firewood because, the crud that comes out the smokestack. But you can build reburners for that crud that's coming out of smokestack because creosote's flammable. You could actually build a gasifier out of that deal.
There's another little thing going on there, too, that people aren't getting, and that's that soot and that nastiness you're seeing coming out of, there's a ton of graphene buckyballs coming out of it. They're only like one step away from being turned into carbon tubes.
Well, there you go, man, and you recaptured that, and so that's not a waste anymore, is it? Creosote ain't a waste.
Here's the simple fact. What you're trying to say, and it's this is the truth behind it, is that there are no waste products. There are only resources that are not in the individual who happens to be observing them worth the effort and time to recapture and refine them so they can use them.
How many things can you think of that you can use wood ash for?
Well, wood ash, if you let it burn all the way down until there's nothing but the ash left, is potash. It's potassium hydroxide.
Yep. You can make batteries out of it. You can make soap out of it.
Cleaners. You can, yep. There's a ton of different things you can make out of it. It's basically potassium-based lye, you know? So, I mean, this. The smoke itself, inside that smoke, there's a tremendous amount of carbon dioxide. And that's something I've been doing my research on, is a way to basically... carbon and silicon are two of the hardest substances for doing anything like atomic layer deposition, which is essentially what my 3D printer works on, is controlled, specific location-controlled atomic layer deposition. Those two are hard to work with because they don't have a potential. They're a completely neutral entity that can go either way, right?
Yeah.
And one thing that I've been talking about for a while is using photonic energy in order to energize it, to bond it to other things, and carbon dioxide is a perfect example of how easy it is to make a nanomaterial, because carbon dioxide means basically you're working with individual carbon atoms. You have broken down that carbon into individual atoms, so that means that if you have the source to create a pattern that is on an atomic level, it's shrinkable to an atomic size, you could literally print individual carbon atom width lines across the surface of something using that substance. How do you break the oxygen off there? Well, I've been saying that, again, like I said, photonic energy. You know, now there's a paper out that's basically stated that vacuum-level ultraviolet rays, the kind that basically the sun puts out and gets absorbed by the upper layer of the atmosphere, they crack the oxygen and hydrogen, the oxygen and the carbon bonds in the carbon dioxide, leaving ionized oxygen and pure carbon.
All right, I took the time to just randomly Google wood ash. All right, to get some uses for wood ash. Now, once again, for folks out there listening, wood ash obviously comes from your fireplace. When you burn it, you end up having to clean the ashes out of the bottom, and you need
the
something to do with
stuff.
It.
Yeah, the stuff that will not burn.
Yeah, so these are just 10 uses of it that I randomly Googled from the internet. First one says, de-skunk pets. A handful rubbed on Fido's coat neutralizes the lingering odor in case your pet gets sprayed by a skunk. All right. Hide stains on paving. The Old House technical editor Mark Powers absorbs wet paint spatters on cement by sprinkling ash directly onto the spot. It blends in with the scuffs of his boot. All right, so the next one on there, enrich compost. Before the organic compound get applied to the soil, enhance its nutrients by sprinkling a few ashes, says the host of radio's You Bet Your Garden, whatever. Anyway, basically, I think that's to put, what, nitrogen into the...
No, you're putting potassium into the
soil.
Oh, okay,
soil. Okay. There you go.
Yeah.
And another, next one down in line, block garden pest, spread evenly around garden beds, ash repels slugs and snails.
Mm-hmm.
And here's one I know for a fact, melt ice. If you're ever out in your driveway and your car gets stuck on some ice and you got some wood ash available, put some wood ash in front and behind your tires and watch how fast you get up out of there. All right? Using it for an ice melt there. And here's
I'll bet you it's useful for breaking the ligands down in grass and other compounds that are have cellulose in them to make paper out of it.
Yeah. Well, here's another one that I wasn't aware of, but I'm going to try this out this summer because I got a pond that doesn't have any wildlife in it just yet, other than frogs, and I don't think it's going to hurt them. It says, control pond algae, 1 tablespoon per 1,000 gallons adds enough potassium to strengthen other aquatic plants that compete with algae, slowing its growth.
Well, slowing down the algae's growth probably a bit, too.
Yeah.
So you can throw some hydrochloric acid in a bottle with some aluminum foil and toss it out there and wait for it to pop, and that'll get rid of the algae for a while, too.
Huh. Will it get rid of it?
I don't know how much good that'll do your frogs, though.
Okay, here's the next one in line, number 7, is pump up tomatoes. For calcium-loving plants, McGrath places a quarter cup right in the hole where when planting. So he puts a quarter cup of the ashes into the plant, the hole where he plants the.
Well, that's a question too. I mean, which burnable plants have the most of those different? Because those are calcium and potassium and sodium are all alkaline metals.
Yeah.
And you find those in bone and wood fibers and whatnot. So. And when you burn it all down, that's one of the those are all components that won't burn away.
Well, here
a rock-like substance, even at that higher temperature.
Here's one that I found out a long time ago by accident, because I dropped my sponge when I was cleaning up the fireplace doors into the ash can.
Mm-hmm.
Clean glass fireplace doors. A damp sponge dipped into into the dust scrubs away sooty residual. Anyway, the black.
So it'll break down that greasy and brownish brackish looking stuff on the glass.
Yeah. So
yeah, I can believe that.
So basically, when I dropped it down in there before, you had to scrub really hard to get that doggone soot off the glass so you could actually see the fire when it's burning. And I started cleaning it up anyway. It started coming off really super easy, so I figured that one out.
I'm kind of wondering how well that would work for degreasing the surface of metal.
I don't know, but it'd be worth trying.
Yeah, it absolutely would. I'm going to give it a shot. I was going to use some dish soap, but I'm going to try that first. And then wash it all off with some, like, denatured alcohol or something after I get it broken down.
And speaking of soap, number 9, making soap. Soaking ashes in water makes lye, which can be mixed with animal fat and then boiled to produce soap. Salt makes it harden as it cools.
Mm-hmm.
So they just pretty much gave you a recipe for making soap.
Yep. You do want to get some very specific measurements on that. Last thing you need is excess lye in your soap and get it on your skin.
Yeah.
Or in your eye.
Well, the stuff is... basically, if you make batteries with the doggone stuff, you can, with some of the unburnt coals in there and some of the ash, you can actually use those two, one for the carbon and one for the chemistry, and build a battery out of the doggone stuff.
Right. Well, so, if you need acid, too, there, you can soak leaves from trees, and they have tannic, that brown stuff that comes out of them is tannic acid.
And so... the last one in this particular list, number 10, shine silver. A paste of ash and water makes a dandy non-toxic metal polisher.
I wonder how to... That sounds like that would work with almost any metal, then.
Yeah, probably shine your copper up, your silver, and...
As long as it's not an acid-based metal like phosphorus.
Well, once again, there you go. It's the ideas are actually out there. You know, man, there's things that go way back. People were back in the 1800s, you know, doing things to either stay warm or they had techniques for stuff. I'd love to spend about, maybe a couple weeks or a month with the Amish community and find out some of the inside workings of how they do stuff.
You go to the library, there are books, you'll find old books from like the early 1900s that have like recipe books and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You'll find tons of books on how to make soap and all kinds of compounds, out of just everyday common household items or items you can get right out of the wild. So I remember seeing one and I was just like, wow, I really need to get my hands on one of these and actually get all the information out of it, you know, like save it and take it home, you know. But I never got a chance to do that, unfortunately.
Well,
so here's just some a little bit of proof about what I was talking about, the oxygen effect. Okay, I'm going to post a link over here for you. It's called the world's first laser rust removal.
Cool.
There you go.
If you can.
They are using a 1,000-watt laser that's spreading back and forth across a fan-like formation. And it literally descales all the rust by breaking the rust down and letting it evaporate off while not affecting the metal. Once it hits the metal level, it doesn't go through. And if you dig a little deeper, the same thing's used on paint, and it's literally stripping the paint in one go off, and when they back up over it again, it'll cut all the way down through the primer and hit the metal. But it's not damaging the metal.
Cool.
It just bounces off of it.
If you can, throw that link down in the chat room, too.
That process is the one that I am talking about with the extreme end of the ultraviolet radiation to take the carbon dioxide that's coming off of that burnt wood you're talking about in a gaseous form and being able to deposit that to make graphene sheets or making even diamond layers depending on the intensity of the two forces you're applying to it. So you could build layer after layer of graphene, then diamond. You know, you've got a conductor, then a dielectric, then a conductor, then a dielectric to make these really super compact, all carbon-based capacitors. You could store tons of electrons on those without having any chemical reaction at all, so it'll last hundreds of years, being charged and discharged over and over and over again.
Man, that's, it's just mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm.
I just, Every time I'm listening to all this stuff, my mind is just racing with tons and tons of ideas, all kinds of for every single idea out there. There's all kinds of other uses for that specific anomaly or material. We talked ten simple processes that you could use wood ash for. And so I had mentioned earlier about there is no waste in anything, you know. Even a doggone gas coming out of your doggone exhaust pipe, if it was redesigned for to collect up, you could still reuse it, you know. So if everybody was really seriously concerned about burning fossil fuels and then realized that, hey, wait a second, I can pull the entire exhaust on this thing, pull all the waste that's coming out of that exhaust, and store it and use it for a purpose. You know?
Mm-hmm.
There's ways to do it.
Yep.
So, heck, man, there's big companies out there that put filtration systems on the exhaust of their big stack pipes. What are they doing with the material that they end up gathering after it, you know?
Yeah, where does it go? What do they do with it?
Watch this.
You want to see how effective somebody can be at reusing every last little bit of something? Go check out a jewelry manufacturing facility. They will capture and process every bit of that dust to get every drop of gold and platinum out of that and refine it all right back up and go ahead and reuse it. They miss nothing.
Well, here's
so, I guess the secret is to make everything so incredibly expensive that basically they're willing to keep reusing it over and over and over again, or using every last little bit of it and not throwing any of it away.
Here's something that a lot of people don't think about. You got a lot of really super cheap furniture these days because of somebody's crazy idea to go to these wood shops that make these really expensive, professionally and beautifully designed cabinets, and gather up their sawdust, mix it with some glue, and press it into a doggone particle board.
Yep. And the glue can actually be made out of different plant resins and whatnot that they normally just go ahead and strip out of the wood so that it doesn't split and break later from humidity changes.
Yeah, so they turned around and took what was one waste product from one industry and turned it into a multi-million dollar industry, because everybody in their house, if you're at middle class or below, you got particle board
from IKEA
furniture in your doggone house.
Or Walmart.
Yeah. And I would even venture to say that probably even some of the richest houses in the world probably still got some particle board up in there, whatever you just called it again.
MDF, medium density fiber board. That's the concrete, the wood concrete of the world, because that's actually, you've got some, if you can keep it from getting wet,
yep.
as long as it doesn't get wet, it's got more resilience to constant vibration than, say, a piece of steel. I mean, you take a hammer to a piece of steel, and what happens? You get a dent.
Yeah.
You hit it again, you got two dents now. And you hit it in one of those dents, now you got a dent that's even bigger.
And your coffee cup vibrates off in the floor and smashes to pieces.
Well, but this is the thing, though. You do the same thing with that kind of force to a piece of MDF, and it's spongy, so it springs back. But it's still rigid enough that you can put hundreds of pounds of pressure with 10 or 15 pieces of that stuff that weigh less than, you know, the same amount of... it would basically take more weight in steel to give you that same resistance, and that resistance will slowly creep away. The MDF resists that creep effect, where it slowly starts moving away from being bumped into constantly. Instead, it just keeps pushing back into it. I mean, the only material I know of that really has that well of an effect is titanium, and who can afford, you know, making things out of solid titanium?
Yeah, be nice.
And it's got to be made in the right configuration. If you just throw a block of it up there, it's not going to work as well at resisting being damaged and dinged and creeping away. You have to build it in some sort of springy fashion to give it the resistance so it could keep bouncing back every time to resist deforming. The MDF, it's ready to go. You just go ahead and throw it up there, you know.
Well, we got all this different technology out there. There's all kinds of people hollering about how the dumps are filling up with stuff. There is so much. You can reuse every single thing that you throw in the trash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm not saying throw your trash out back, because especially if you mix it all, it's going to be a nasty mess. But we even have the technology to literally take somebody's trash like that and separate it all into its useful components.
That's right.
You want to build a multi-million or billion-dollar appliance for lazy people? You go out there and build a trash machine that whenever, instead of them going out buying plastic bags, they throw whatever garbage, whether it be food waste or anything, into this machine, and it will literally grind it up, separate it, put it in its own little containers that they can then in turn take to a recycling place and, you know, or use it themselves. Think about all
that. Or put it on a conveyor belt that's made out of recycled materials that eventually sends it out to a facility that makes, turns it into roadbed.
Yep. Think about all the glass, wine bottles, beer bottles, soda bottles, or whatever. If you had a machine that could take and literally grind that glass up into a fine dust and then turn around and take that glass after it fills up a certain container, move it right over and superheat it into glass again into a square block that looks like a Lego, now you got something you can build some really cool looking walls outside your garden there with.
Well, yep. Remember what you said about the wood ash. If you can get a high enough purity of that, the potassium, or if there's sodium in it or whatever, out of it from burning it down and getting just the metal hydroxide out of it.
Yeah.
And let that dry out and then heat that up until that does melt. With that glass sitting in it, the glass will break down and dissolve into it, and then you can literally paint that onto something and it'll resist the heat that normally only glass would resist, but it's water soluble, so you can easily apply it to anything you want.
Well, there you go,
and
man.
Hit it with some acid, now you got a bunch of silica gel, you know. Silica gel is not as effective as aerogel at resisting heat temperature changes, but it's still pretty good. If you could build a whole house out of blocks of silica gel, you wouldn't have to worry about any other insulation in your building.
Well, there should
not for average environments, you know.
In a perfect world, there shouldn't be any waste products, because everything that you see around you was put together by man, and nature will break it down. If you're not using it or protecting it, nature will break it down.
Claim it. It reclaims it.
And so, with that said, all those resources, instead of going out filling up the dumps and complaining about how it stinks in your neighborhood or the dumps are getting overfilled, then start recycling that on a real basis, you know? And it's man, it's, you know, some folks said, well, you know, it just costs too much money to do this or that. Just plastic alone, man. Just think about the island of plastic floating out there in the ocean, you know?
Yeah.
I worked in a injection molding plant before, and they reground up the plastic, the bad parts. They would regrind them, and they would mix that regrind in with fresh, brand new material and make more parts. You know, so it's not like it's trash anymore. I mean, heck, if you had a one of those grinding machines that would grind up the doggone plastic that you had in your house, instead of throwing it in the dump, you just grind it up, melt it down into something useful. Can you think of a lot of uses for plastic?
Tons of uses. That's why we make so much of it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they keep cooking it down and making fuel out of it.
But these folks, they keep hollering about how the plastic is going to be in the dump for so many years or whatever, instead of actually using it. You know? When some folks over there in Europe did what you were talking about, basically it was refining plastic bottles into gasoline. There you go, man. It just, to me, it's frustrating, it's aggravating that the people will sit around and they will complain about what it is that they have the power to fix. And you do have the power to fix it. You don't have to throw all that trash into one bag and then, you know, throw it out on the curb and send it on down to the dump and add to the stink. You could actually use the food waste to throw in your compost pile to help your gardens grow. And while that stuff is composting, you could actually use that compost to heat up water. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
That's when, plants and stuff like that rot, they release heat. So now you got your waste food over there that's actually putting nutrients into your compost, that whenever you spread this out on your garden's going to grow better. And you got plastics that you could save up into a 50-gallon drum or something like that when you get enough of it together, or melt them down as you go and make like blocks that you can build stuff out of. You know, that glass idea that I was talking about, when you melt glass, different colors of glass mixed with each other, you know, it looks pretty cool. You know, and you could actually use that for a lot of processes. There's all kinds of ideas out there, man.
Yeah, that's the problem, though. Lots of ideas and not enough hands doing stuff, you know?
Yep.
Instead, the only stuff they're doing is sitting around and typing on a keyboard so they can say how terrible somebody else's idea is.
Long time ago, when I first moved out to the country, we burn our trash out here, right? Because, we don't have access to, like, a trash service. Now, you can get access to a trash service. You have to get put on the route or whatever. But then you have to walk from wherever your center of your property is, where your trash is, all the way up to the other end of the deal. Anyway, there's a guy that sells burn barrels, big old steel drums. And so you go buy one of these barrels from him. As he comes out to bring you a new barrel, he offers to take away your old barrel for free with the trash in it. And so I was thinking, I wonder what the heck that guy's doing with that. And then later on, whenever he came back one time to give me another burn barrel, I asked him, "What do you do with all that stuff?" And he was telling me, he said, "You'd be surprised what you find in the bottom of those trash cans." He said he was finding, whenever you're burning your trash, it will melt aluminum foil, it will melt aluminum cans, and that mm-hmm. aluminum will basically work its way down and find a cool spot, and he would get little ingots of aluminum that he would throw off into another barrel until that barrel got full, and then he would take it over to the doggone recycling place and sell it.
Yep.
So he was making
them run it through a conveyor belt and test it for magnetism. If it doesn't stick to the magnet, then it goes into a hopper and gets turned into aluminum cans or whatever else.
That's pretty much what he was doing. He was separating the wood ash out there, the paper products.
There's probably some intelligent design in that he didn't even realize, too. When you're burning all that stuff, the fire itself is sucking all the oxygen out of the atmosphere, and that's one of the biggest drawbacks to aluminum recycling, is that the oxygen that comes into contact with it ends up bonding with it, and then you get aluminum oxide, which is really hard to break down. That's the main reason why aluminum was worth more than even platinum up until, very recently. Like Napoleon let the very wealthiest and richest of his people use aluminum silverware at his dinner table, and everybody else that showed up there had to just make do with gold. That's how valuable it was, because they had to find it in raw form. They had no way to properly crack it and break it down in order to get the aluminum out of the other elements.
Yep.
Out of the rocks and stuff that were around them. So you look at the energy that it takes to do that, even with the most efficient means that we have now, if you can find a way to take that aluminum and keep it from getting that oxygen into it, making it more difficult to reuse, then you end up with a lot more of that aluminum more easily reusable. You're saving all that energy from having to be expended on it,
Yep.
So, that's a great thing, man.
Yeah,
and... They weren't even thinking about.
And,
Raymond, say something there? I just saw it popped online.
in every household out there, people use canned goods, and there's 10 cans in there. And that tin could be recycled, aluminum could be recycled, the glass can be recycled. And if it was done properly, if you could build a machine about the size of a doggone dishwasher that would grind it all up and send it out, into maybe a separate machine that separates all the stuff, out of sight, out of mind. you're not buying any more trash bags. You're just throwing your trash in this machine, and it's self-cleaning. And
well, that's why I said the second half of my printer is a recycler. You put all the stuff you don't want it anymore, and it's not a giant thing. You have to set out behind your house. It's literally something you could throw in a backpack and take with you. That's the final goal.
Well, we could put together the dream team like I've been talking about. We could actually build these things like this, you know. I told this one guy with a trash company one time, he was driving a truck, he owner-operator kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, I said, you know, I got a design sitting there that has a trash truck that will literally separate that trash before you ever even get to the dump.
Right.
Instead of compacting it and mixing it all in where you got a big, nasty, stinky mess, it actually has a place in it that will take let all the liquids go down to a certain tank and give you levels of everything. It'll separate the metals, and it'll separate the plastics and the paper and all that kind of stuff. And by the time you get to the other end of your route, you've got separate containers that have all this different material in it. And so, you know, with that said, you get to your place where you're normally going to dump your trash, all you got to do is pull these separate containers off, replace them with another container, and then you're ready to go again. But now, you don't have to pay nobody to go out there and dig through the trash and potentially get cut or injured or whatever. It's already done. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And if the truck was actually designed, engineered a little bit more, you could actually have this truck go to a predetermined spot where the truck will dump, the truck pulls up over a platform, there's containers that come up there, it'll dump the contents of each of the containers into all their significant spots, and then it goes down into the machine and cleans it all up, so ain't nothing getting wasted. Not even the wastewater. Because you could actually
right.
take that wastewater, clean it up, and split it into hydrogen and oxygen and use it for the fuel to run the machine that you're using.
Well, and most of the stuff that's washing away from all that, you get the right balance of those components. It could be used for growing plants, and then...
Yeah.
There are plenty of plants that will ignore the stuff you don't want and strip all the good stuff they want out of it, and then you just pull the plants out of it. Feed it to the fish like you were talking about with aquaponics and whatnot.
I had a friend some time back that had a garden hose running from his pond up to his garden. And I was asking him, I said, man, why you got your water hose down there connected to the pond instead of to your water up there? He said, man, do you even know what's in water these days? He said, that kills your plants. He said, but down there, if you pump it straight out of the pond, what he did was he hooked a sump pump down there to a solar panel that had a battery charger hooked to it, and then, so whenever he wasn't using it to water the garden, it was charging the battery up, and he was pumping pond water up there and spraying it on his garden, which threw in nutrients into his garden, and he was getting really super healthy plants and large tomatoes and stuff just by pumping it out of the pond. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if people did that and recycled like we're talking about and used all of these anomalies that we mentioned in all the videos that I posted out here at ShazizRadio.com, then there you go, man. Problem, solution, it's done. It's a done deal. All you got to do is get people motivated to do it. Now I'm asking people out there listening to this radio show, get your neighbors motivated. Start these networks and start designing things. Even if you think it's a dumb idea, write it down. You know, show somebody. What you thought might have been a dumb idea might have been the missing piece of the puzzle. You know, because by itself, maybe it's got a flaw. But using that, like Lenz law for effect, you know, something that you don't want going on in certain incidents because, you know, you get friction, you get heat, and your electric motors burn up from having to work too hard. Well, let's stop making them have to work so hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's fully possible. There's waste energy coming off of every single transformer out there. And you can recapture that doggone energy. Can you add Raymond again? He's trying to call in.
Yeah.
I don't know why he does that.
It's probably has something to do with his, I didn't want to do that. Probably has something to do with his version of Skype or your version of Skype or something. Let's try
well,
add a call.
If
come on in, Raymond, the water's fine.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Yeah, you finally morning. Made it. All right.
Apparently.
Earlier, let me finish the thought real quick. If we could get people to start paying attention to a bit of common sense and build these groups that we're talking about and listen to those people that you think have dumb ideas, write them down, put them on, get a big one of the big giant whiteboards that you can erase and everything and draw these ideas down, troubleshoot them together. Sit around and have coffee together and talk about how you can recycle stuff and how like you could use this anomaly over here to benefit that or whatever and build these things.
And then sit down together and watch the movie Iron Man or something to get inspired. And after you're done watching that, you get good inspired, get out there in the shop, make something.
Yeah.
Try your ideas.
Now get into what I was wanting to talk to Raymond about.
Uh-oh.
Look out.
All right, so earlier in the show, I had mentioned all these videos that I had posted out there and all the different anomalies and the reason why I like these videos, and it drives me insane when people go out there and mock and ridicule these videos because, oh, that's not free energy because it's got this loss and that loss and the laws of physics say, you know, or whatever, blah, blah. Go home, little boy, and get your science book out and start studying real science for once. Okay, now, Raymond, there's a video out there where I posted in the chat room about a solar electric motor. And essentially what it is, the guy took some solar panels and he put it around a cylinder. And so no matter where the sun is on that, it as long as the sun's shining on that top or side or whatever, that thing will turn and keep going. So those solar panels that you've been getting, the ones that are rolled up, would be perfect to put over, like, say, a 50-gallon drum that you could sit there and make one of those doggone things, because even when they're cracked up, they still produce electricity.
Correct.
So imagine you take a 50-gallon drum, put it on some bicycle wheels, roll one of those solar panels around there, and you can get enough energy off of that solar panel to actually turn a little electric motor that's actually assisting that that thing and spin it, right?
I'm not exactly sure what you're saying, but you have jogged my memory, and my memory says that you need two drums. One is in the sun, it gets hot, and whatever is in the drum builds a pressure and pushes what's in the drum over to the other drum, causing it to get heavy and causing it to tilt.
Well,
what you're talking about is a propane sun follower.
No.
Sun trap.
No, that's...
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's not even remotely close. But it's still good,
okay,
because what you said right there was, not only will you have, okay, picture, you got something that looks like a cylinder in front of you.
Okay,
hold it out in front of you, either vertically or horizontal. And imagine on that cylinder, you have a solar panel set all the way around this thing. Even if it's just strips of solar panels, you know, every so many inches, you got another solar panel. And you take the energy from that solar panel and you feed it into an electric motor that is built onto a solid shaft that whenever the sun's shining on it, those solar panels will run that electric motor, which will keep that thing spinning. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, it is.
Now you take your idea on the other side.
I'm getting what you're talking about.
Now you take your idea on the other side about heating stuff up. You could take that heat and you could actually, on the back side of the doggone deal, put some Peltier elements on there that will, when that, whatever that heats up, when that hot air is coming out running across the back of them Peltier elements, the cool side on the opposite side, which will be in the wind, will actually put more energy towards that motor. And so...
Let's go one step further. You got a solar panel that's in the sun, and it's taking up the sun because it's dark and it's making electricity, but now all of a sudden the backside is heating up. So we put the Peltarium on it and make more electricity, right?
Yeah.
How?
And so, essentially, the solar panel...
Wait a minute. Let's use water. Because water will thermosiphon. As the water heats up from the heat of the Peltarium, it goes uphill to a container. Okay? Now, the water heats up, and it goes uphill, and at night, you get a lot of hot water to heat your house. Now, what we've been saying all along, all these many months, these years, we've been on Saturday, talking about mad science. Whoa! Come on, you can make electricity from sunlight and get heat too. And the heat can be turned into electricity. But the heat's got to go somewhere. So we'll heat some water. Duh.
Well,
I mean, you cannot create energy from nothing. You cannot destroy it. However, you can change its size.
You can harness it.
Form and or direction. Energy is free.
You can harness it.
Yes, it is free. Use it over and over and over again.
All right, well, listen.
Okay, go ahead.
All right.
I'm sorry.
I also posted videos in there about saltwater batteries. One particular video, the guy took a copper plate and a aluminum plate, put them to one inside of the other, and poured salt water in it. It was one running electric motor. Now, by itself, that don't seem like that big of a deal. But imagine you got a 50-gallon drum outside there with a bunch of different plates inside there that you got salt water that can be refreshed anytime you want, and keep that thing charged up at all times. So now you got a wheel, an electric motor that is actually running off of the sun via the solar panels that are actually part of the turbine. Then you take like my redneck wind turbine and you put some fins on that thing. So not only is it picking up wind, it's picking up solar, it's picking up heat like you mentioned, Raymond, and it's charging up a big saltwater battery that is helping to not only run that, but charge up other things at the same exact time. So, no matter what's happening outside, this thing will never stop turning.
It just dawned on me. I had a flash as you describe it of exactly what you're talking about. Wow! That is... Oh, man, come on. That is super cool. A 55-gallon drum with a solar panel wrapped around it.
Yep.
So no matter where it goes, it's got solar energy. So it's turning. Oh, man. Holy cow. Shazam. Thank you. I was talking other stuff that sounded stupid, but it's not. But exactly, I was not getting what you said.
Well, with the same... With this same process that oscillator deal that you made and Muddy's wind turbine and all these other deals together, everything that we know from static electricity, we literally could build a self-contained device that would power itself 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year without ever even stopping. All right? And it would run your house, literally. Because the size and the scale and using everything that I'm talking about, and, you know, static electricity, people underestimate static electricity until it gets them, you know? So, you know, with that said, I think it's about time for a coffee break, and since I saw Stephen Gibbons pop up there in the chat room, I'm going to throw a song in. It's Talking Heads, Road to Nowhere is the song that he wanted to play on a different show that wasn't able to have access to because of the computer we're on. So I'll throw that one in there and another couple tunes, and we'll take a quick coffee break. But before I go, I want people to think about what it is we've been talking about here, that if you really seriously take all these anomalies by themselves, ignore all the idiots out there that tell you why you can't do something, and you really pay attention to what it is that we're talking about, you could literally build a generator device with off-the-shelf products and recycled things that would run your house. You know, right now we use electricity so ridiculously inefficient. And there's all kinds of forms of electricity and tons of different stages of frequencies of electricity that on one hand, your appliance won't even recognize it, you know, but it's still there nonetheless. Now you find out a way to get your stuff to recognize that particular form of electricity, such as a simple example of taking static electricity that wouldn't run an electric motor, pumping that static electricity into a capacitor, and now you have a punch that will run that electric motor. You see what I'm saying?
I really do.
All right, folks, so you're listening to Mad Science. We'll be back right shortly. I'm going to throw on a couple tunes. It's time to get some coffee and refresh, and then we'll be right back. So stay tuned, everybody. Peace and love.
What's going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office, and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Well, we know where we're going, but we don't know where we've been. And we know what we're knowing, but we can't say what we've seen. And we're not little children, and we know what we want.
Take a night.
frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Love a cup. I would... Oh, God, yes. Oh, that is gorgeous. Yeah. I need a cup with the brown stuff, the shade of an acorn, made warm by the same source that I take my cakes from. Using a teapot, a mug or fine china, been hooked up to IVs, need constant supplies, and a drip for my urges might verge on perverted, prefer earthy brown tea, I'm certain it's worth it. With Sherpas who work hers and use a fresh fountain, I've discerned brews from Peruvian mountains, I've slurped up a cup from an elephant truck, with a couple of monks who are utterly stuck. I've had bourbons with sultans and creams with queens, and I've bathed in Earl Grey, I'm really that keen, and missionaries dismiss me for my single epiphany. The dip between him and me is a simple sip of British tea. So when times are hard and life is rough, you can stick the kettle on and find me a cup. Now when I say Earl Grey, you say yes please, Earl Grey,
yes please,
Earl Grey,
yes please.
When I say Assam, you say lovely Assam,
lovely
Assam,
lovely.
When I say ooh, you say ah, ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh.
Oh my God,
going on wrong.
Yeah.
I've been around the world in 80 brews to see the place it takes me to make a brew that tastes like the cream cakes made by angels do. I'm not the same as you, get shaky but aim to swig amazing fluids but don't make it the same. Now using fine leaves picked by pretty maidens in a bag knitted by a seamstress who lives in Copenhagen, brewed up in a pot made of semi-precious metal, let the blessed content settle in my very special kettle. Now when I say ooh, you say long, ooh,
long,
ooh,
long.
When I say herbal, you say no thanks, herbal,
no thanks,
herbal,
no thanks.
No. No, I want milk in it. Strong though. I want to see that spoon stand up.
If you're tired of tea, then you're tired of blood.
I'm madder than a hatter and it fires my mic. Liken me to Earl Grey, a Sam or Ginger, Lapsang, Souchon, raise my pinky finger. Keep your sodding coffee in a proper cup of coffee. Bottoms spot me lobbing teapot to your poncy rotten coffee shop. Coffee clocks nodding off, lost the plot, sodding off. Need some caffeine tannin and a Battenberg to top it off. Cuff them off a different cloth, a different lot can take their beer on 80 cups a day. I haven't slept for 80 years. You could say I'm mad for tea or just say I'm mad. Oh, you can't stay any longer. Oh, actually, I'm quite glad. All the more Battenberg for me. I can barely pour. My hands have got a bit shaky from caffeine. Oh, love it though. I'd sell my own grandma for a cup. Well, I'd sell your grandma for a cup.
To catch up on the news, some classified adverts I chanced to peruse when I saw a category called steampunk. I turned to it eagerly but left in a funk, for I quite enjoy the steampunk aesthetic, but what I beheld there was rather pathetic. These intrepid online auctioneers have just taken modern objects and stuck on some gears.
It's simply not cricket, it shouldn't be done,
but it's clear how their thoughts had run.
Just glue some gears on it and call it steampunk. That's the trendy fashion nowadays. A
cop a painted chunk of some 1980s junk will fetch a pretty penny on eBay.
But it got even worse than that, I'm afraid, and as I went on, I became more dismayed, for they often didn't modify the things they wanted me to buy.
Heavens to Betsy, island of unregrets.
Steampunk is more than a mere mode of dress or decoration, so it brings me some distress to see a metal cicada described with that name. Or a teacup, a mood ring, a silver gilt frame. Gluing on gears at least takes effort. This is sloth at the worst.
Just do some gears on it and call it steampunk. That's the trendy fashion nowadays. A copper painted chunk of some 1980s junk will fetch a pretty penny on eBay.
Steampunk refers to a type of science fiction about alternate past, not future prediction. Often set in Victorian Britain, but the history of technology has been rewritten. So put a bit of thought into your designs. Use leather and brass, 19th century lines. Retrofuturistic is a good explanation. Blend antique reality with imagination. But calling things steampunk to try to sound cool makes you look like a bloody fool.
Just glue some gears on it and call it steampunk. That's the trendy fashion nowadays. A copper painted chunk of some 1980s junk will fetch a pretty penny on eBay.
Gauges and rivets, copper tubing and glass lend a steampunk creation a real touch of class. Gears are appropriate to introduce if they look like they have a legitimate use. Although Nixie tubes are undeniably splendid, they date from long after the age of steam ended. Pity really, I just love Nixie tubes. Anyway, I hope you've comprehended. So use the word steampunk correctly, old chap, and don't use it to refer to crap.
Just glue some gears on it and call it steampunk. That's the trendy fashion nowadays. A copper painted chunk of some 1980s junk will fetch a pretty penny on eBay.
We'll be right back.
is a fine trumpet soldier.
Wow, strong, healthy lungs. Soldier?
Soldier!
Bah!
Soldier! Hello? Can you hear me? I'm getting another call. Listen, soldier, just keep playing the horn and I'll get back to you. Sorry about that. Quiet all day and then everyone calls at one time. Okay, let's see here. Tell me when you can hear me. How about now? Hello?
Hello? Listen. Listen to me. Listen to me.
Listen to me. Listen to me, my children.
Listen to me. Listen to me. Listen, children.
Gather around and hear the sound of my voice. There's girls and boys, well, you're making a choice. And you can think for yourself, or you can buy all my toys. Just come on, little help, jump around, make some noise. I never lie to you, you know I die for you. Yeah, I love you too, because we will do consume and gobble it up. Come on, show me some love. I'll be blowing you up.
Is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Hello everybody, we're back. You're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html on shazizradio.com. And so, with that said, we would have been back just a hair bit sooner, but we were doing the crazy dance with the ever so popular Skype program, trying to get everybody up inside the phone call. So we got Justin in here now, we got Thomas in here now, we got Raymond in here now, and Muddy's still out sleeping, so we'll catch up with him later.
Yeah, Muddy.
Yeah. just hope he ain't drooling on himself while he's sleeping, man.
Especially if he's where one of those windmills gets shocked by it.
Yeah, buddy, you know that whenever you ain't here, we talk about you behind your back, right? So if you're listening,
it's impossible to talk to somebody behind their back if they're facing you.
Oh, yeah, so that's it.
I mean, the man is borderline genius. Come on.
Well,
he's asleep when everybody else is awake. And he's awake and doing weird things. By weird, I'm talking about really smart when everybody else is asleep.
Well, when it comes to us being involved, he threw himself under the bus by not getting out of bed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yes, that's it. Yeah. So there you go, Muddy. If you listen to this podcast, this is on you, brother. Uh-huh. They snooze, you lose. Ain't that the phrase? Alright, so I'm not getting back down to some mad science business. We talked about all kinds of things, everything from repurposing to recycling, and, you know, I don't believe there's any such thing as a waste product coming off of anything, because all of it's got uses, you know. Nature will break it back down into its natural form eventually, and so with that said, you know, if you ain't using it, you lose it. It's plain and simple.
Use it and lose it.
Yep, so... Well, you got all these anomalies out here, all these technologies, all these ideas being thrown at you on the table. Write them down. Put them on your big whiteboard. Get your dream teams together in your local communities and start experimenting, building stuff. You're liable to find something else, probably something even going to be profitable in your own pocket as far as ways to make money. You know, take that recycling system in your community and use that recycling system as a multi-purpose where everybody can benefit from it, maybe financially and, you know, as far as saving the planet kind of thing. You're not going to get no sympathy from me whenever you're talking about save the planet when all you're doing is sitting there, standing there protesting save the trees with a wooden stick and a paper sign, unless, of course, like Thomas mentioned, that you got recycled label on the back of that paper that you did, and maybe you're using, like, a stick made out of sawdust. Or a branch that fell off a tree. Yeah. And if you're talking about how you're like dying of thirst because there's a drought, then move closer to the water or bring the water to you. It ain't like we got this modern day invention that a lot of people haven't heard about. It's called plumbing. All right. Pipe it in, man.
Don't use lead pipes. I mean.
That's yeah, don't use lead pipes if you're planning on drinking it.
Years and years back in the dark ages, that's what caused all the people to become crazy. They used lead pipes. They used lead plates, lead forks and knives, the spoons.
Lead barrels for their wine.
You know, I'm going to put a video on YouTube showing people how my company, we build... X-ray rooms for hospitals and doctors and so forth. And I got so many stupid comments about how my men, oh my God, they're handling that lead with their hands and they're going to get lead poisoning. You don't get lead poisoning by handling lead once a year. You get it by using it over and over and over again. And by the way, folks,
not washing your hands and handling your food and eating it.
Exactly. And the thing is, lead itself won't absorb into your skin. It's lead oxide. It's the white powder when lead rusts. It oxidizes. It turns white.
So essentially,
is what you breathe in. It's what you swallow. And then your body removes.
Yeah, I was gonna say if you leave lead laying around in vinegar, it makes lead acetate.
Uh-huh.
And that's actually sweet to the taste. Most things that lead compounds form are sweet tasting.
Exactly.
So.
And so you don't realize that you're actually eating or absorbing lead into your system.
In a format that your body can actually grab it and hold on to it in your cell structure, and then you get poisoned by it. Heavy metals, not good for the body, you know?
Well, that's where the common sense thing comes into play, man. You're not going to eat the pencil, you're going to write with it, so...
Well, that's made out of graphite, though.
Yeah, well, either way, lead, whatever, you know, and...
Wait a minute. The glazing on a porcelain contains lead. When it's fired, if it's fired properly, the lead is sealed. Has no problem. But if your porcelain, your coffee cups, your plates, and so forth, if they're not fired properly, then the lead from the microwave or the heat of your food can actually leach lead into your food or your drink, your hot coffee, whatever.
Or just scraping the surface and scratching it, releasing it.
I personally know three different people that got lead poisoning from drinking hot coffee. They love their hot coffee. I'm sorry. Wait a minute. Two who drink coffee. Don't want them to drink hot tea. Three people got lead poisoning from drinking hot liquids from coffee cups that were made in the Orient. No disrespect. They have no controls, no safety controls. In the United States, we have government officials that are at every porcelain manufacturer.
Well, and that's the thing, too. If you're making that stuff at, like, your local ceramic shop or something like that, unless somebody complains, they're not going to come down there and check to see if they're using compounds they're not supposed to.
Exactly.
So make sure they're using stuff that's the glazes and whatnot that they're selling, that they're putting on your ceramics. Make sure that those were bottled in the last, like, 20 or 30 years.
Right.
And make sure it's been sitting around 40, 50 years, because it might actually still have some lead compounds in it.
Here is the real, the genuine problem, all right, that so few people actually get lead poisoning in the United States that 98% of your doctors do not recognize the symptoms. Therefore, if you go into them with lead poisoning, you're going to have this symptom, that symptom. They do not recognize it because so few people get lead poisoning.
You'll get misdiagnosed.
Exactly. This pill, that pill, next thing you know, you're dead from lead poisoning, and they don't even realize it. Nobody realizes it.
All right. So with all that said, always know what you're using. Stephen Gibbons posted a link in there about powering your mobile devices with some. This particular one, I guess, is using footsteps. Whenever you're walking, it's putting electricity. That falls into the piezoelectric crystals that you were talking about there, Raymond. And also, Ryan Abrams did a video here recently where he took a Peltier element, was running a small electric motor off of his body heat. And so, you know, even what I just mentioned right there, you can build a suit that, well, you're going to be running around anyway. Most people need exercise, so why don't you build a suit that has really heavy-duty spider wire strands inside there that's turning little gears, that's actually turning a little generator motor that's powering up your suit while you're going. And you got piezoelectrics in your feet, 98.6 degrees body temperature, running thermal electric Peltier elements, and you got all the battery power you need. Throw a little solar cell on the brim of your hat. Bam, there you go. See, this is what I've been saying all along. You know, put all your eggs in one basket, and if you lose the basket, you lost all the eggs. Take all your doggone, all these different ideas and use them together. You see what I mean?
Yes, I do.
All of them. You got a suit now that'll power up the doggone, keep your cell phone battery charged up. So while you're lost out there in the middle of Nowheresville or in the woods or whatever, you climb around looking for a high spot to get reach a direct line of sight with a cell tower so you can call for help, whatever. Keep your batteries charged up for your flashlight for when it gets dark out there. I mean, we're talking space age deal. You know, somewhere along in the future, they're going to have some doggone clothing that you wear that do just that. And, you know, according to that link, it's here. It's now. And it's the actual product that's going to be coming online. But, you know, I can visualize the doggone future people out there, you know, exploring around, and they got suits on that's not only keeping them warm, that are temperature sensitive, and maybe they don't like the color of the suit, so they hit a button and it changes colors, you know, or whatever, you know, just...
Blue is the new red.
Yeah, the new communications, night vision in your glasses, so that if it's dark out, you can use night vision, or you can actually use a flashlight. You might want to use night vision if you're in a hostile scenario where you don't want the other guy seeing you.
Wait a minute. I need something. That glass thing, oh, Lord have mercy. Do you realize that they not only make, I've got three of them out in my shop, a welding shield, a welded helmet, that the glass, the slightest spark, will cause it to turn dark?
Yeah, they're called auto dimmers.
Wait a minute. Now, we have
personalized
sunglasses that if you put them on in a dark room and you walk outside in the sunlight, in less than a minute, they will slowly turn dark.
Yeah.
But during that minute, your eyes shrink. The opposite of dilate. Wait a minute. This welding shield does it in 2/10,000 of a second.
Yep.
Why can't we make sunglasses do that?
Why couldn't you?
We could.
The thing is, I've got one shield two of them that you can actually dial in how dark you want it to be.
Well, I say it's 2016, and we're behind the times as far as technology goes. Now,
do I need to pull that other video up?
The technology's here. It has been.
You're talking about the dial. You take two layers of polarized film and you rotate them around. They get darker and darker as you rotate them.
Yeah.
No energy needed. Okay. Well, I've added a third layer, and instead of it getting darker, it changes color.
There you go.
Wow. Like we're talking all the way from green to red to blue to yellow, all the way through the spectrum, and each... as you rotate it around, the smaller the increment of movement, because it's blocking all but one frequency of light. And as you rotate it around, you can change that frequency so you can adjust it to whatever color you're trying to let through while blocking all the rest of it out. It's blocking like 90% of the 99-something, it's like 99.7% of all the other frequencies of light. It's blocking about that much of that light from that while it's letting all but like 0.3% of that light come through. It's only blocking like less than 1% of that particular frequency.
Cool. Well,
we're talking blocking a frequency, everything except one frequency of blue, that if you put them right next to the other frequencies it's blocking, they all look to your eye the same. You can't tell the difference. So this thing lets you see the difference.
Folks out there, you need to listen. Thomas just backed up what Shaziz said. Shaziz said the technology is here now.
Yeah.
Why aren't we using it?
There's a comment Stephen Gibbons put in there for Thomas. He said, and don't throw away your moldy bread, Thomas may like to explain this one. Found in a rare red bread mold, which can be turned into manganese oxide, which has electrochemical properties. And he's posted a link in there.
All right. That sounds cool.
Well, all plants and plant-like, actually almost everything on the planet, not just plants but animals too, they convert photonic energy into chemical alteration. That's how you get photosynthesis, though. It's just having the right chemicals and absorbing the right frequency of light, and they can move one element off of a molecule and turn it into something else, and suddenly you've got a disparity of energy, so you can actually use that energy to do something else.
What I want to do is get this down to the basics, the simplistics, and that is make some sunglasses that will instantly go dark to whatever dark setting you put it you want. And you walk outside and bam, I mean, faster than you can snap your fingers, your sunglasses are dark.
Those would come in handy for that rude cop that likes to put that bright flashlight in your eyeballs.
Well, until he takes the nightstick and hits you over the head for being disrespectful by wearing sunglasses while you're talking to him.
There's a song out there about that. I wear my sunglasses at night.
If you throw the nightstick back, it's got a flashlight in your eyes.
Yeah.
But if you got sunglasses on and it's night and you get pulled over and all of a sudden he puts this flashlight in your eyes, well, your glasses go dark instantly. And
especially if they're prescription, he ends up in trouble.
You're going to duck. But you can see it. I mean, come on. Not all cops are bad. Just a few.
Yeah, well, either way, all the answers to every... There's a solution for every problem out there, if you're willing to do it, you know? I mean, there's... The chemistry is mind-boggling. If you actually paid attention to some of the things that Thomas is talking about, there are processes to doing tons of stuff. You know, a simple salt battery. You got salt in your doggone shelf, you know? Who doesn't have salt in your house?
Really?
You know? Worst case scenario, you keep some LEDs running and you don't stub your toe into the coffee table. You know, and for every, like I said this a million times, for every light bulb you take off the power grid, that's going to be a savings in your pocket towards the next thing. And you do another light bulb the next month, so on and so forth, until eventually, you know, half your house is on the power grid, the other half is off of it, and you're saving money. And eventually, if you want to get completely off the power grid, then you're still connected, but you're just not using very much energy at all. You know, all that technology's there, and as far as recycling, you're paying a trash man to haul off your trash when your trash could, in reality, pay for itself. You know, hey, aluminum cans. I knew this family one time, they drank a heck of a lot of soda. Now, granted, they probably drank more soda than the money they got out of the cans, but in reality, it was a piggy bank for them so that at least one of those trips to buy all that soda, They cashed in all them cans and had some money to go out and buy some. So, you know, if you're supplementing your finances by recycling this stuff and making money off of it, I knew folks that gathered up newspapers. You know, people would throw their newspapers away. They were asking everybody, hey, man, when you get done with your newspapers, can we have them? Had no idea what they were doing with them. But what they ended up doing with these doggone things is they had a special mixture that they was rolling these doggone things into logs and burning them as firewood.
You're right. Saving money in the wintertime.
Yeah. So, they had other uses that they were using them for, too. You know, like wrapping up stuff. You know, like whenever somebody's getting ready to move, you wrap your glass inside of newspaper and keep it from getting run. So, There's multiple uses for it. Shredding it up, making paper mache, that kind of stuff. You know, there's a whole... It's just unlimited. If you're willing to get out there... My friend Steve's always saying we have the sum of all man's knowledge at our fingertips. And we do.
And we're not using it.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Those of us who do, talk to those of us out there who don't and get ridiculed for trying to say something like charging up some batteries with some doggone Peltier elements or piezoelectrics, when in reality, if you pay attention to the basic science and some mechanics and physics and stuff like that, it don't sound so stupid when you actually build something that works, like a tennis shoe that has little lights in it so the kid don't get run over by a car at night. And the guy who made it making a lot of money? You see what I mean?
What you said about the kid wearing the tennis shoes that when he walked, they light up.
Yeah.
So he doesn't get run over by a car. It brings to mind the time that the guy robbed a convenience store. When the police showed up, he was still in the process of robbing. He saw the police. He took off running. And the police ran after him, but he was faster than the police. But the police eventually caught him because he was wearing tennis shoes that light up every time he took a step.
Well,
he ran through some woods and they could follow him. They couldn't see him, but they could see his shoes light up every time he took a step.
Yeah, moral of the story is if you're going to dress up like Santa Claus and rob 7-Eleven, don't wear tennis shoes with lights in them.
Right, exactly. I mean, folks,
don't wear the jingle bells so they can hear you
yeah.
coming.
Yeah.
That's correct. The technology is here. We're just not using it properly. Come on, folks.
Or using it at all.
Holy cow, I can't believe this. This is one great program today now, folks.
If I could just get the right people in the right doggone shop, you know, and just start building stuff, you know, I'm still working on at least my first page of the book that we talked about, where essentially we're going to do a bunch of how-tos and put them out in some books that we can put out for free. Because if you get these things on the table out there at your local laundromat, where you know, you can show somebody how to make a wood-burning stove out of an old 50-gallon drum, or you know, whatever.
Go to the laundromat and show them how to use their subwoofer from their stereo system in a 55-gallon barrel to wash their clothes in it and stop going to the laundromat.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Better yet, we use that the two electro plates that I was talking about were. Your clothes have got dirt in them because that's why you're trying to wash them. So the second you drop them in that water, they're going to turn that into a conductor, the water.
Yep.
So you run one of the wires for your speaker down into that solution, into a metal plate, and have another plate at the bottom with the other end of the wire that goes to the speaker itself, one from the stereo, one to the speaker, and then run the other wire from the speaker straight back to the stereo. Now you're running the power that runs the subwoofer through the water, cracking the water and making your oxygen cleaner, so you don't actually need to add any OxiClean to your water. You're just turning the water straight into the OxiClean.
Alright.
Yeah, not only that, you could actually use the bass from that same subwoofer to vibrate the water.
Yep, that's the whole point. You've got the you're making the water into the soap, part of the components of the soap, so you're not having to add soap to the water. You're not having to add an oxygenator to your soap for your water, and you use the vibrations from the subwoofer instead of an agitator that potentially could damage your clothes by grabbing them and ripping them.
Right.
Instead, it just shakes them clean.
Well, a lot of times
it's basically constantly blasting the surface of the water or the surface of the clothes with the water as it moves back and vibrates back and forth from the subwoofer, shaking it all up.
A lot of times, a lot of dust particles will stick to your clothes because of static electricity, because of the difference in charges of the dust as opposed to your clothing. And so you can attract dirt even when you don't want to attract dirt. You can attract dirt. And so, by definition, the strongest field is going to work its way out. The strongest field is going to win its way out. So who's to say you couldn't have a strong static field that literally would, you could walk through this little gateway and it would literally make your hair stand up and pull all the little dust particles off of you and put them to a plate and you walk away clean.
There you go. Hey, the technology is here, folks. She just said it.
Yeah.
I'm backing it up. And I'm saying, it's here. Use it.
Well, so, while you're at it, you should probably have a strip that runs around every door and every window that's basically hit with a high DC voltage, and there's a plastic isolation between it and the outside that releases those electrons directly into the air, so that you can actually have all that air as it comes in, being anything that's dust and whatnot floating in air, it'll fall to the sill or fall to the base of the door instead
yeah.
of coming to your house.
So there you go right there, because they got ionizers that you put in your house that takes dust and smoke out of the air, and so why couldn't you put one of those at your doorway and you never even have to dust your house? Because the reason why you got to dust your house is every time somebody opens up the door to go inside, many, 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 many other things come in with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so if those many things coming with you are microscopic or small, and you got a static magnet picking up the crud as it comes in. Sorry about their luck, they ain't coming in.
Yep. And then you could and then you don't have to worry about constantly cleaning your computers and your knickknacks and everything else off of all the dust that's in it, including cleaning out the insides of your lungs that are picking up all that dust too.
Yep, and you could actually have a vacuum system set up so that whenever you like the little plates get dirty, all you had to do is kind of sweep it down and hit the vacuum and it'd suck the dust right up into a filtration system.
And then you take everything you filtered with the filtration system and put it in your garden to grow more tomatoes.
Yeah.
There you go. I mean, nothing is wasted. I mean, you know, free energy does not exist. Duh. There's no such thing as energy that is not free.
Well, just in this show alone, we've pointed out so many different ways that it is true. All right? Just basic science. And we're not defying any laws of physics by anything we even pointed out.
We don't want to defy the laws of physics. We want to use the laws of physics to get...
That's right. They're actually... The laws of physics are handlebars and hand grips for us instead of walls and prison doors to hold us in.
Exactly. Exactly, Thomas.
Speaking of handlebars... I still got to get my unicycle, man. I've been itching for a long time. Ever since I've seen ape hangers and a unicycle, I want a unicycle with ape hangers on it.
Which gets you a Darth Vader helmet and a flame-throwing set of bagpipes?
Yeah.
And a kilt.
Wouldn't that be cool? I'm telling you, if I get that thing put together, a unicycle with ape hangers, I'm riding it on a video.
Somebody's going to go see you going by and they're going to like, man, I thought we were in Missouri, not in Portland.
Well, my point in even saying that is that, you know, as crazy as that may sound, anything's possible.
If you
really take the time to think about it, and even on a unicycle, you know, you got to figure out your center of balance, and that's how you can able to ride a bicycle with only one wheel on it. And if a person can ride to and fro and up and down stairs and stuff like that on a doggone unicycle with one wheel and still be able to hold their balance, that tells me something's going on in that brain that is smart enough you might want to ask them a few questions. You see what I mean?
Yep, I do. I really do.
I'm just saying there's a lot of brilliance out there. A mind is a terrible thing to waste is what they say, but I see a lot of wasted minds on a regular basis. And
it's an even worse thing to taste.
Yeah. That's disgusting. I ain't eating no brains. Even if I was a zombie. That's one thing about the zombie apocalypse. Everybody thinks the fat people would be in the most danger during the zombie apocalypse, but according to that movie, The Day of the Living Dead, I would be the most endangered species on the planet because of my brain is so big. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
They'd be like, he's got a lot of brains. Let's get him.
Yeah. The
all right, truthfully, they'd probably get Thomas before they'd get me, but you know, it sounded funny, so I had to say it anyway.
I'll be on that floating island out in the ocean.
Yeah, you and me both, brother. As soon as
the thing is, I pointed this out to somebody else. If you go through all the hassle to prepare for a zombie apocalypse, most likely the person who's going through all the steps and the facility they set up is going to be the starting point where that zombie apocalypse started from.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, if we start seeing dead folks popping up out of the ground, I already got my bags packed and I'll be ready to go for that floating island idea.
There you go. I've never seen a movie where it had zombies who could swim.
Well, my loving wife said she'd feed me to the zombies to get away.
Yeah, you don't have to be fat the fastest person in the group. You just have to be faster than the slowest person.
Yeah. There you go. Or smarter than the guy standing next to you. Hey, look, there's Elvis.
Whoa, wait a minute. Can't get
dark. All right, guys. Well, we're getting down to it.
An autograph.
Only got a couple minutes left. What'd you say, autograph?
Yeah, I just did have him going over there trying to get an autograph from Zombie Elvis.
Yeah. So while you're over here eating him, while he's trying to get an autograph, then
or better yet, Zombie Bill Murray.
Yeah. All right, well, like I said, we're down to the wire there, and it's been a brilliant show as usual. I hope that people will pass these links on to all these podcasts and just hear us out what we've been saying all along, because all these videos that I pointed out in the chat room just today alone, one of them by themselves may not do the job. It's obvious. You're just not going to get enough unless you scale it up and do some engineering. But all of these ideas together produces a solar-powered generator out there inside your yard that probably could look like a piece of a work of art that not only is catching sun, it's catching the wind, hydroelectrics, thermoelectrics, chemistry from the dirt or whatever. It just goes on and on. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. I've said it till I'm blue in the face, and I'll keep on shouting it as long as I got a breath. Because if you're going to sit there and tell me on one hand that the planet's dying and we're all polluting everything, but you're still throwing your trash in the trash can and wasting it, sending it off to the dump, you're still driving a car that's leaking oil and transmission fluid and who knows what else all off into the ground that's washing down into the creeks, you're standing out there protesting with a wooden stick and a paper sign saying save the trees. I could go on forever. Don't be a hypocrite out there protesting stuff. Be proactive and get out there and clean something up and make something. It's as simple as that.
There's no jobs in America in here. You're too busy basically complaining about things instead of trying to be productive and make something that you can sell out of the country. Yep. And buying stuff from China, you know.
When the voices...
Two strokes in one shot, you know.
When the voices of wisdom speak the truth, then you should listen. It's as simple as that. Well, guys, we got to go. Any last comments or YouTube channels or anything you want to throw out there real quick? No? Sound like crickets going, man.
I think you said it all. Thing is, I mean, the last part of the show, we made some really silly comments talking about zombies and this, that, and other. But at the same time, sometimes you have to put a little levity in your conversation.
A spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go, Thomas.
And sometimes you have to laugh in the face of adversity or life will get you down, because when people like us sit around thinking about all these ideas and we look out at the ignorance of going on in the world and the waste and just people doing without and the craziness, it's not necessary. And it just drives us insane, because we know we want a better world. You want a better world. And the only way to get it is when we decide we're going to be good caretakers like we were meant to be, and we get up off the couch and we do it. That's it. Start off at home and work your way out.
It's gone from mad hoo-hoo-hoo-ha-ha to mad insert angry face.
Yeah, science. Exactly. All right, everybody, that's been the Mad Science Show. Peace and love. Hope to see you on the Knights of the Round Table. Tell your friends. Post it on your social media networks and tell everybody there's some crazy guys over here that are speaking common sense. And if you want a bit of an education, you might just find it in the least likely place, ShazizRadio.com. Take care, everybody. Peace and love.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap. Ah! 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 Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.